Salutations, Mets fans. Welcome to this week's edition. For all you kids out there, the official podcast of your baseball prospectus Mets local site. I'm your host, Jeffrey Paternostro. With me once again this week is Jarrett Seidler. Jarrett, the motherfucking Mets released motherfucking Henry Mejia today.
It's the end of an hour, man.
It is. I have fond memories of my early days of podcasting, waxing poetic about Henry Mejia's rehab start in New Britain after his first Tommy John, and they're still carrying Drew Gagneau and Tim Peterson.
Maybe not for long.
Maybe not for long.
I mean, they also have literally no 40-man ad. It's the most plausible 40-man ad here. The most plausible 40-man ad here is like Alex Sanchez.
Yeah, I mean, this may or may not. So we're recording on a Tuesday afternoon, which is new for us because I'm off from work. I just came back from a too old-fashioned lunch with my wife and mother-in-law, so it's been that kind of show.
I am having a blood orange seltzer.
And I got a hard stop before I go to dinner and have a couple more drinks there. This is my week of gluttony, I suppose.
I think I'm allowed to have a piece of pie, but that's
about it. Yeah, you're missing out. This is episode 135 for all you kids out there. In the first half, we're going to do two halves, I think, to try to keep it tight.
Yeah.
First half of the show.
We both have stuff to do.
I
have to go see the Creed 2 preview.
Yeah. Noah Syndergaard trade rumors. We would have done this earlier, but Jarrett had like multiple hockey games to go to.
You had something Sunday, right?
Yeah, I went to two different. Yeah. I went to a flute and classical guitar duo concert and then an opera.
It actually worked out well because had we recorded on Sunday, we had almost nothing to talk about. And yeah. Like 12 things have broken since then.
And now the Mets keep leaking. They kind of sort of want to trade Noah Syndergaard.
This is a bad idea, which we'll discuss in relation to the James Paxton trade, which also happened.
We'll talk about the catching situation with Yan Gomes now officially available from Cleveland.
But Kurt Suzuki and Jeff Mathis off the market.
Yep. I think we'll get the catching market. And in the second half of the show, we'll answer your email and then a Facebook question we can't answer, but I do want to make a point about it when I answer it.
So that'll and be we'll show. Probably discuss Becky Lynch or Cleveland.
Yeah, sure. We'll see how much time we have. I don't know if there'll be time.
We have
Pack
to
Saturday plan. Yeah, no, fine. Whatever. Yeah. Noah Syndergaard. So here's my thing about trading Noah Syndergaard and why I think they're actually going to trade Noah Syndergaard. So we both like
stupid.
Well, there's that. But sort of the media context around it. So we had heard rumors like, you know, Jake Odorizzi for Michael Conforto was a thing. But you heard about it, like, after the fact when the deal had already kind of died down. You know, Brandon Nimmo for...
lots of people.
Josh Harrison, most recently, was...
The Mets turned that down, by the way.
Yes, fine. But it's like, you hear those rumors, like, after the fact, or kind of like... They're not getting leaked to the house organ.
Yeah.
Joel Sherman's not writing... Was it Joel Sherman? It's Dave Lennon. Dave Lennon's not writing columns about it.
Yeah.
They're pushing this.
This is watering the ground for convincing people this is a good idea so they can do it and not hit a PR backlash the right deal comes along for them.
And it all started with really Brody Van Wagenen at the GM meeting saying, I don't plan to announce a Jacob deGrom trade or Noah Syndergaard trade at the GM meetings. Where the obvious follow-up question is, well, are you planning to look into it after the GM meetings, Brody?
We're open to everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, sure. But you've seen, like, really specific packages, none of which I would take, because really, if you're writing about trade rumors and you don't know the two high-end arms you're getting from the Padres, you shouldn't be writing about, you know, trade proposals.
Probably,
basically.
Like, Luis Patino and Logan Allen or
something. Yeah,
something
like that, yeah. Maybe you get Chris Paddock.
Maybe
we know
Michael
all these
Baez.
Names. Padres yeah. list just went up last week, if you want to check it out.
Yeah. They probably end up with Andres Munoz and Cal Quantrill.
Yes. The Mets. So here's my thing.
They did like Cal Quantrill out of the draft.
I'm sure they did. A lot of people did. If you're trading Noah Syndergaard, you're not replacing him with... Like, they're kind of, like, trying to sell you on, like, oh, we have internal depth. Your internal depth, past the five starters that we would pencil in for the 2019 opening day rotation right now.
Which already includes Jason Vargas.
Which already includes second half all-star Jason Vargas. Are a swing man who has third time through the order issues and is pitching with a partial tear in his UCL.
That's how people go.
Yes, I give our listeners a certain amount of credit in being able to discern where I'm saying. I'm just going to say Corey Oswalt, Chris Flexen. I mean, not both Chris Mott's a fucking minor league free agent. Drew Gagnon's still in the 40. PJ Conlon's still in the organization. You can go out and sign Patrick Corbin. You should probably go out and sign Patrick Corbin.
So here's the thing. They've already backed off from we're signing Patrick Corbin, it's too. Like, we really like J.A. Happ.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We got to strike that middle ground between Jason Vargas and Patrick Corbin.
So here's the thing. Teams that are trading for Noah Syndergaard can just go out and sign Patrick Corbin instead.
For now. I mean, you can see how the market develops after that. Somebody's going to miss out on Patrick Corbin. You know, Houston was in on James Paxton.
Sign Patrick Corbin and then trade Noah Syndergaard.
Sure, that's an option. That costs money, Jarrett.
Right.
And my other thing is, like, so this is, as you would say, a fucking Mets half measure. Because they're not trading Noah Syndergaard as part of a rebuild. They're trading Noah Syndergaard and going to claim it's a way to improve the 2019 team.
So here's the
deal. Yeah.
Noah Syndergaard.
Top 20 pitcher in baseball.
MLB trade rumors arbitration.
$7 million. 6-7.
Let's see. And we'll also do the gram here. It's basically six.
All right.
Yeah. So he's going to get 6, 10, 15, something like that. Yeah. So over the next, so, you know,
if you want to frame it within the James Paxton deal, you're getting sort of the 225 for Paxton plus the cheap third year on the front end.
Right. For a pitcher, probably of broadly similar quality and broadly similar concern.
So my issue with that, saying that, is yes, I know Noah Syndergaard has had durability issues. Paxton's never had a season as good as Noah Syndergaard's 2016. And calling anyone, or accusing anyone having durability issues similar to James Paxton is a pretty big claim.
Paxton's left-handed. Mm-hmm. Paxton's 2018 was a lot better than Syndergaard's.
He's like 4 years older.
I don't know if that really matters when we're projecting the next 2 to 3 years.
It might not. I don't know.
I think you're getting a little bit more than the Yankees just traded for James Paxton. To make this deal in any way make sense, you need to get four times as much. And you're not getting that. You're not getting Fernando Tatis. You're not getting Eloy Jimenez. And if you do,
my issue are the Padres and White Sox really, really in this market for a three-year window. Because the teams that are, like, doing the little, you know, they're coming, starting to come out of their hard tanks, like, aren't really doing this. The Braves aren't doing this. The Braves are actually the logical landing point here.
What are you trading for?
I mean, you can get.
They're not giving you Acuna.
No.
What are they giving you? What, you're trading for Mike Soroka and Austin Riley? That's not any better than that. That's a little bit better. That's in the range of a little bit better than what the Yankees gave up for Braxton.
So, like, the actual deal here, and I put this out on Twitter, this is not the, you're not getting the high-end piece back, but if you're trying to improve your team in 2019, the basic trade I proposed was trade him to the Dodgers for Alex Verdugo, Dustin May, Will Smith, and
Andrew Tolles. There's no way the Dodgers make that trade. You'll get two of those guys max.
Yeah.
Maybe only one.
But, like, the thing is, weirdly, the Dodgers are, like, the perfect spot to hold him. But, like, you're not getting, like, if you're trading for, let's say you get the Padres to trade you Fernando Tatis. Great. Fernando Tatis is not a major leaguer in 2019. Not on the Mets. Padres might promote him in 2019. The Mets will give him a year in Syracuse.
No. They'd call him up in June to play third base, probably.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I guess you have to because of the nature of the deal, but.
You can, yeah. I mean, that's the only way you'd be able to sell it. You know,
you're not really getting that.
About the spring, if he blows up spring, you bring him up at the end of April. Otherwise, you bring him up in June.
If you're getting an elite high-end position prospect, your options are basically trade him to the Angels for Joe Adell. They might do that. If I'm the Angels, I strongly consider it.
I'm going to bring up something which you may end up wanting to edit out. That sure becomes a hard trade to sell because we're the only people that are going to have Joe Adell as a top five prospect this offseason.
Might be true.
Yeah, I mean, on the MLB, when MLB Network and SNY show the MLB pipeline rankings, I don't think he's ranked high enough for that for them to be able to pull that off.
Those dudes were all there for his futures, BP. I was not standing far from them.
I know several of them. They love him too, but he's not on their prospect rankings right now. I mean, I have no idea, but I'm assuming if he was, I would have heard it. I should probably look this up before I say this. He is ranked 15th. So
it's not like it's lower than us, but it's not like it's still would consider an elite level prospect.
Right, but it's a harder sell. Instead of trading him for the quote second ranked prospect in baseball or the quote third ranked prospect in baseball, you're trading him for the quote 15th ranked. The Mets care way too much about how this looks, not how this is.
But just continue on. So, like, the elite position player prospects that are fairly close right now are Vlad, who you're not getting. Mm-hmm. Adelin Tatis, who probably not, but maybe. Eloy, I don't know what the White Sox are doing. Yeah. And then you get into, like, Robles. I don't see them trading within the division.
The Reds aren't trading Senzel.
Hira, and then again, is another guy that we love, but... And I think he's getting more heat coming off his AFL performance. And that's like a very Brewers-y kind of move, I think, at this point, too.
Yeah, but I'm not sure the Mets love him.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, are you really making this trade for Bo Bichette? That's the kind of prospect I'd expect to get back at the top of this deal. Bo Bichette and Alex Verdugo. I think if they do make the Padres trade... Luis Urias is very Mets.
It is. And it's like the weird thing, and I like Luis Urias. It's
I do too.
Weirdly, it's like in some ways a weirdly duplicative skill set with Jeff McNeil.
Oh, it's completely duplicative with Jeff McNeil. He's a worse Jeff McNeil.
Whoa, buddy. Yeah, that's fucking spicy. That's fucking spicy.
You've very quickly, you know, we've been breaking out the 101, and there's like 11 or 12 like first tier prospects. It's really second tier because the first tier is Vlad and Vlad only. Mm-hmm. But like that tier from like 2 to 11, 2 to 12, but most of those guys aren't. The Rays are not giving you Wander Franco.
Yeah, these people, and the Mets don't want Wander Franco in the Nappy League.
Yeah, it's, you know, 2 years away from the majors if everything goes perfectly. You know, the Astros are not giving you Forrest Whitley.
They didn't give up for Paxton.
They better just call Forrest Whitley up on May 10th or whatever. You know,
so what's the actual? So my thing is, if this team's going to compete in 2019, it's because Noah Syndergaard gives you 200 innings at a Cy Young level.
Right.
You're not replacing that. I mean, hey, maybe Patrick Corbin gives you that. Patrick Corbin's had one good season since 2014 and had a Tommy John in there. And I like Patrick Corbin. I think they should sign Patrick Corbin for Jason Vargas' spot. Absolutely.
They're signing Patrick Corbin. Patrick Corbin's going to get $150 million.
Yeah. So why are you spending that much for, like... So what it comes down to me, and this is my suspicion, this is, let's call it slightly informed speculation. The Wilpons just want him out because of hashtag rig reasons. He's too whatever. Yeah, they run
town for this kind of stuff.
This shit happens. Drunk Ike. Hashtag Drunk Ike, baby.
Right.
It's that kind of bullshit. That's the only reason to get rid of him.
Justin Turner doesn't hustle. Mm-hmm. We can't tell you the real reason we're cutting Justin Turner, so we're going to make up a reason that's kind of in the same area, and then we're going to cut him anyway.
Yeah.
Can't justify it as a baseball move. So we're gonna cut him. We're gonna give you a reason it's close, but it's not the real reason.
Yes, Noah Syndergaard is at 90s night with Robert Gsellman in the East Village.
Not a they post on their Instagrams, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
The Noah Syndergaard World Drinking Tour is not like a giant secret here.
On segways in Amsterdam,
you right? Can
draw whatever conclusions from that you want.
Yeah, Conforto, I guess. Is he married now, or is that his...
I don't know. His whole Instagram is him just playing around with his puppy, so...
Right. He now has a large house and a lawn and plays with his puppy, so he's not
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, he was participating in that stuff with
This
Syndergaard
is all
conditions.
like Wilpon acceptable behavior.
Right. Very good Instagram. Griffey Conforto. Very good Instagram. But yeah, and I know they're frustrated. The Wilpons have instituted a Mets mentality, especially with pitchers. We know you're hurting, just pitch through it. Syndergaard reports everything and doesn't always take the ball
Well,
from
that's
their
the other thing
perspective.
too, is we're also assuming that Zach Wheeler and Steven Matz will be healthy and effective next year when we're trading
Syndergaard,
Noah Syndergaard.
Syndergaard has elbow soreness. He's going to tell you he has elbow soreness, and then he's not going to pitch.
Yeah, he'll skip a start. Yeah.
Right. They don't want that. They perceive
We're
that
also
to
not
be
going to extend Zach Wheeler while assuming he's going to be healthy and effective in 2019.
sure. They do not perceive that as the kind of pitcher that they want. And again, this is not breaking new ground. Read Pedro Martinez's autobiography if
Yeah.
you. We're not like betraying king and country here
It
or anything.
just annoyed because, like, what are you, like, you're not replacing. You had to trade a Cy Young level pitcher and then develop this guy. A Cy Young level pitcher on a cheap deal who wanted to extend cheaply. And this is the one piece you got because Darno kind of busted, which happens, sure.
When you get into this, I called it last night on Twitter, the cycle of mediocrity.
Yeah.
You start developing, when you develop a really good player, you then trade him for risky prospects. You will crap out doing
You trade him for Urias and Mejia, Logan Allen, and one of the A-ball guys. Let's say Tirso Ornelas.
They're actually going to want Austin Hedges, but sure.
Why are they going to want Austin Hedges?
They love Austin Hedges.
Oh my God. He can't hit.
Because that's a yeah, Jeff Mathis just got 2 years,
I
dude.
know. Whatever. I'm just doing like the prospecty thing. And then it
Whatever.
turns out Mejia can't catch, Luis Urias is DJ LeMahieu, and Logan Allen is Seth Lugo. Then what do you do?
This Mariners deal, if it works out well for the Mariners, Justin Sheffield turns into like maybe 90% of James Paxton. They
Right.
could very easily end up with a setup arm, a middle reliever, and a fifth outfielder.
Yeah.
That's like a 40th percentile outcome for this deal. That's not even a horrible outcome.
And that's you, because I think Sheffield is more of a lock to be a reliever than you do.
Right, you don't like Swanson as much as that. I think Swanson's got a chance to be a third starter or like a high-end multi-inning reliever.
Your Swanson report was very spicy, yes.
Wasn't that
No, it was
spicy?
accurate from what he's
Really
laid down,
that is
but.
it really that spicy? He's I have seen him
If
hit
you've seen
92.
Erik Swanson recently.
I've seen Erik Swanson several times. I've seen him a long time ago. I've seen him recently. I've seen him hit 98 in multiple seasons. I have reports that he's hit 100. I couldn't confirm them, so I didn't run it, but
So what's the, everyone loves this. What's the Mets equivalent package for Noah Syndergaard?
So somebody asked me, they do not have a Justin Sheffield equivalent in the system. They just don't. If
Yeah.
you think it's done, it's not. Done's the Swanson equivalent.
Sure.
So a rough equivalent for me is Jimenez, Dunn, and Lindsay
Yeah, I can see him.
in
I meant
terms of
more what's
value.
the I meant more what's I'm sorry that. What's the Mets equivalent package for Syndergaard? What are they actually getting back here?
If the Yankees were making this trade, I think basically the same package, but maybe they get Esteban Florial
Yeah. Loáisiga instead of Swanson.
They might like Swanson more than Loáisiga. There are people who like Swanson.
Sure. My wife has decided to turn on the printer and print stuff out while I'm recording in the office, which is always nice. It's a nice feature for everyone listening at home.
We definitely can't edit this segment out or
Yeah, it's
anything.
fine.
This was,
This is so dumb. This is the dumbest thing, Jarrett. I
This
mean,
is what
there's no
makes.
way they trade Syndergaard, short of like a Syndergaard for Chris Bryant deal, or the equivalent, already established pre-Arby or, ARB1 star level position player that does not make this team.
Chris Bryant and Chris Bryant only.
I could probably think of another one if I racked my brain, but that's probably a team that I'm interested in. Syndergaard for...
I don't know if the Cubs would make that trade. What,
Syndergaard for, sure Syndergaard for George path. Springer?
Yeah, so I was never making
that. Maybe not. I'm just saying, like, that. But that's like, short of making a deal like that.
Ever making that deal.
They're not making the team better in 2019. They're not even making the team cheaper, which seems to be something of interest to them generally. Because to replace that production, even at like a J.A. Happ level, is going to cost you more than Noah Syndergaard.
Slightly, but getting that position player back stops them from having to actually go sign anybody.
They're going
to
sign Marwin Gonzalez, who isn't going to be that much anyway. Like, they're not, like, who, like, they're not going out and, they're not getting, like, a Machado or Harper replacement in this deal. Because they were never spending that anyway.
Yeah, but people think they are.
They're not. It's the Mets.
I keep seeing, well, I'm not saying that they're not spending. I'm saying that the people keep, like, think that they're getting, like, four of San Diego's top five prospects, including Tatis. That is not happening. That deal was never happening.
Yeah, they've already said Tatis and Gore are basically unavailable. And again, if you're the Padres, why are you you're not opening a window for the Padres are not re-signing Noah Syndergaard if he's any good for market value when he hits free agency. So they're creating a three-year window. Do that
is if Syndergaard signed a cheap extension as part of the deal.
Right. He ain't doing that.
The only way you can do that.
And, you know, Tatis probably isn't up for them in 2019. Paddock needs another year. Gore's 2 to 3 years away, depending on how quickly they can ramp him up with the blister issues. Yeah, Urias is basically there. Mejia is basically there. They may not start Mejia over Hedges. Yeah. That's like, you know, Logan Allen's basically ready. Like, it's a very, very good system. A lot of it's in A-ball, and it's like 18-year-olds in A-ball. So why are they trying to open a window for 2019 to 2021 when the Dodgers are still looking to be very competitive in that window? Like, they're not besting the Dodgers there. Like, why are they making the move this year? They don't really know what they have in Urias at the major league level, or Tatis, or Mejia.
The other thing is, if they were going to make this kind of consolidation turn to free up 40-man spots, it would have happened by 8 p.m. today, because those 40-man spots go way down in value to them when they have to lock the 40-man for protections. That's why they're dealing marginal prospects for, like, random players to be named later, and rookie ball guys you've never heard of right now. They've already moved Colton Brewer to the Red Sox. They've moved Walter Lockett to the Indians. Like, these are actual prospects. You know, these are moves that they would have to make. This is one of the reasons the Paxton trade happened yesterday, because the Yankees opened up a 40-man spot because Swanson was going to have to be added.
Sheffield was already on.
You know, that there's an urgency to make that trade when you're making your consolidation trade before the 40-man locks. It doesn't lock, but if you have to add guys, you have to add them. It doesn't actually lock until, 2 days before the winter meetings or something like that. I don't know where meetings aren't that far away.
I mean, just for me, like, what? If you're going to trade Syndergaard, you're trading Wheeler and DeGrom, too. And blowing it up. Like, ideally, this dude is starting game two of your playoff series this year if you have designs on competition. That's the guy you want there.
Yeah.
And look, I know there's been durability issues. I know he's, you know, underpitched his peripherals at times because of his issues holding runners and, you know, maybe the command's not as fine as you'd like. But I'm just going to pull up. I'll be a good company man and pull up the baseball perspectives page. Let's see how actual long this takes me to get to his player card. It would be nice if I could pull up his. They haven't actually run Pacoda yet, so.
Sure.
Yeah, that loaded slightly faster than I thought it would. Noah Syndergaard was worth 5 wins by DRA this year. He was worth 6.4 wins in 2016 and 4.4 wins in a 150-inning rookie season. Like, by DRA minus, he's basically 50% better than the average major league pitcher. That's an ace. He hasn't done the innings yet to actually establish himself as an ace. That's an ace that has 3 years of cost control where you're going to pay $35 million for him. For the Mets being the Mets, this is exactly what you should want. This is the key to your designs on contention. Much in the same way Nimmo is, much in the same way Conforto is. Rosario.
Yeah.
There's no reason to trade this dude. You might, though, need to get him a better catcher, Jarrett.
Yeah.
So, Yan Gomes is available because I don't know what Cleveland's doing. I guess starting Perez and Haas since they traded Mejia. After not playing Mejia for years because Yan Gomes knows how to handle our pitchers, now we're ditching Yan Gomes. But I guess they're probably ditching the pitchers too, so.
Listen, I mean, they didn't think Mejia was a catcher. It was not a particularly well kept secret within baseball. It was something we discussed, you know, as part of where to rank Mejia. It doesn't matter that his team doesn't think he can catch. He also got traded a lot later than you would have thought.
I guess so. I'm of two minds here. The Mets should probably be interested in Yan Gomes. I don't think Yan Gomes is broadly. I think he's riskier. He hasn't been good. He hasn't really been a great player since like 2014.
It's also kind of expensive and getting kind of old.
Yes. I think he's a safe bet to be an above average catcher the next couple years. You know, the second and third year here are team options, so you have some flexibility. I think
he's more of a timeshare catcher than you'd think, too.
I think he's a, I don't know if I want to say significant improvement over, he's probably a significant improvement over Plawecki, but maybe not.
But they're going to ask for so much for him, right?
You know, he gets good marks on, like, the pitcher handling and the, you know, game calling aspects that don't show up in his warp. And I think he's above average generally. But, I mean, he had a crater year in 2016. So, I think he's a little risky, especially given his age. I mean, I take him. So, here's the Indians want, they're scrambling for young players because I guess that's the thing you say when you have a ton of cost control 25-year-old all-star dudes. But would you trade Peter Alonso and a back end of the top 10 guy for Yan Gomes?
Fuck no, but that's what you're going to have to trade.
Yeah, no, and you love Peter Alonso, as we know. That's probably a bad example.
Let's Jared Kelenic.
All right, we'll use Jared Kelenic. They're not going to be that far apart on the 101 because I won't let you get Alonso that high, but I think it frames it differently with Kelenic because he's so far away too, because the risk factors are different. But I mean, there's no catchers. And again, you can paper this over with money with Yasmani Grandal.
Yeah,
and, you know, the dudes that have signed so far, Suzuki and Mathis, got like 2-10 range. Maldonado is probably going to get a little more than that because he's going to be regarded as a little bit better. Like 2-14, 2-15. Maybe he gets 3 years from somebody, but I doubt it.
Bad idea. Bad idea.
We know you stand on that. I just feel like, and the Syndergaard trade scuttlebutt ties into this, they're doing that thing where they're pushing in way too early in this market.
Yeah. Which the Nationals are also doing.
Yeah.
But this is very, this is what they do.
Like, trying to trade Noah Syndergaard, trying to find a catcher this quickly. Like, there's a very good chance you're sitting here on January 15th and you have Manny Crandall's looking at, like, 3-39 or something.
Yeah.
Or even less. Maybe he's taking a one-year pillow deal.
Yeah.
Because it sure looks like teams. We're already hearing rumors that, like, teams are going to dump a bunch of non-tenders to try to flood the market, which is totally not a thing they had to settle a lawsuit about 15 years ago, but
yeah.
There's just not, like, the same thing that there's not going to be as good a market for Noah Syndergaard as you think in trade means there's going to be less of a market for these useful free agents, like Yasmani Grandal.
Sure.
Like, who are the teams looking to spend money to open a contention window or continue to contend that are really looking for a catcher?
Everybody in the NL East except the Marlins.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the Nats already made their move, obviously. I think the Phillies are fairly happy with Alfaro. They should be. I don't know what the Phillies are doing.
I think they would make a move for Realmuto, but
Realmuto, maybe even Grandal. That's fair. That's a move that right. They should absolutely make.
I could also see them trading Alfaro as one of the headline pieces for Realmuto.
Sure. That also makes sense.
That I could see both of them making. I mean, without looking exactly at the catcher, but like, so a lot of teams need catchers, but three teams have already locked catchers in. The Rangers locked Mathis in, the Rays locked Zunino in, and the Nats locked Suzuki in, and they're probably all starting. Yeah. Zunino definitely.
And Mathis can do whatever.
They're talking about having Suzuki share time with some combination.
The Rangers signing Jeff Mathis when they have Jose Trevino is hilarious to me, but whatever.
I don't get what the Rangers are doing at this point.
Sure.
I haven't for a little while now. So this is something that happened to Sandy Alderson, and I think it's happening to John Daniels, too. It's kind of like the failure to adapt to changing market conditions. Like, you start off as the smart guy with the good ideas, and then enough time passes, and you don't adapt, and then all of a sudden, you find yourself behind the curve and don't know how it happened.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like that's happening to the Rangers right now.
I'm writing the Rangers list right now, and it's back to being a very Rangers list.
Yeah.
It's an extremely Texas Rangers.
But, like, everybody system. Is doing, like, the right, stuff right, that yeah. the Rangers did well, you know, in terms of kind of a little bit offbeat player development and really focusing on high. They have a lot more competition for, like, the high-end athletes from weird places now. Mm-hmm.
You know, they're getting like the kind of dudes that like the Angels and Diamondbacks are signing out of the Bahamas, the kind of guys that the Rangers would have gotten 5 years ago.
Right.
You know, the Deshaun Knowles, the Christian Robinsons.
Right. I mean, they were in on Deshaun Knowles, ended up with Ketron Moss instead. Just a very, you know, a lot of the guys that they would have drafted are going ahead of them now.
Yeah.
Although, again, you know, Bubba Thompson.
It's a good get.
We love Bubba Thompson.
We do.
Cole Wynn didn't pitch publicly. I got excellent reports on what he was doing on the backfield.
Mason Englert, their third round pick, popped
Mason
too.
Englert yeah. also got
it's
very
the
good
Rangers.
Report.
They get these guys.
Yeah. You know, and they've still got, like, some dudes. Like, they've also had a lot of bad injury luck, like whatever happened to Matt, whatever's happened to Matt Joel, like how Cody blew his elbow, like right as he was like, you know, making, you know, he was making a huge jump and then blew his elbow, which is not uncommon, by the way.
Cole Reagan's got hurt, like.
Right.
I think it's still like it's another. I always like the Ranger system more than most because it's the kind of players that appeal to me as a prospect writer. I had to reread Kant's Critique of Judgment to write the Leody Tavares report, so you have that to look forward to, readers. But it's like those kind of, you know, Juan Pablo Martinez and...
You know, hey, look, Leody hasn't developed like we hoped he would, and he's falling on the list. Like, he's still going to be one on the Rangers list, right?
Yeah, he's still one.
I haven't written my part of that list yet, but...
He's still one. And it's like, I'll tell the anecdote again. It's probably going to end up in the blurb somewhere, but like... Somebody, a baseball ops person, texted a mutual friend of ours asking, because we published the list right before Futures, asking why the hell Leody Tavares was still making mid-season 50s, and then he happened to be at Futures, and then texted that friend back, and after watching Tavares' BP and said, okay, I get why.
You know, but maybe he's only, you know, Malik Smith.
So my likely comp for him this year was Leonis Martin.
Right. Which you totally didn't pick up because of his name, right?
No, I was thinking of, like, those kind of toolsy Rangers center fielders that don't entirely work out.
Yeah. Oh, they've had a few. They've had a few.
But Leonis Martin was a decent, I mean, he's still a useful player, and he's like a five, yeah.
He's like the, yeah. Because a lot of them started out as toolsy middle infielders and ended up. By the way, with the Adrian Beltre retirement, they are converting Jerks and Profar to a third baseman. They're not putting Gallo back there.
It's interesting.
Yeah. So one interesting thing that happened was when Joey Gallo was a third baseman, he really hated playing anywhere else and used to bitch about it all the time.
Yeah.
But once he stopped playing third base, he decided he didn't like playing third base anymore and didn't want to play it.
Sure.
So he's got some temperamental qualities to himself, I guess. I mean, since he was in high school. Yeah.
I mean, he's punchy on his Instagram. Yeah. A little punchy on the Instagram. The Mets never announce ads or no ads, like, until 2 minutes before the deadline.
They may not have anybody.
Oh, I don't know that they will. It's a little weird that they waived Mejia if they didn't plan on eating the spot, but...
I mean, they may have just, you know, they may have been trying to do him a solid and let team scout him in the Dominican Winter League.
Whatever.
It's not totally out of line.
They might still bring him back on an NRI, although my point is they rarely give the same NRI perks as other teams if somebody else is interested.
Your most likely guys to get added, Ali Sanchez, David Thompson.
Harrell.
I'm looking at Chris Wallen's list. They could add an arm out of nowhere. I wouldn't be shocked if they added Matt Blackham or Adonis Ucetta.
Sure.
Both of whom are not first-time eligible, as neither is Allie, neither is Carpio.
This is your 40-man ad previews. It's extremely boring this year.
Yeah, I mean, the guys they needed to add were Bobby Wall, Daniel Zamora, and Eric Cantwell. They already added all of them, and McNeil, obviously.
Yeah, so. Someone suggested to me they might make a consolidation trade where they move Cecchini.
They could also be taking a consolidation trade.
They could.
Yeah. You know, for all you guys all bitched on Twitter about how they didn't have enough 40-man spots, and that's why they couldn't call up Pete Alonso. They actually have, like, a bunch of marginal dudes filling up their 40 and nobody to add.
Yep. Here we are. I think they should take a flyer on Connor Green, who got DFA'd by the Cardinals.
I could see that. Connor Green got DFA'd by the Cardinals.
I know.
See that.
He was bad this year. looking at what I do with the Cardinals. Like,
yeah, I know.
I saw him in AA as a starter, and I'm like... I thought it would work fine as a reliever, but he just has never thrown enough strikes.
He's pitching in the AFL, too. They DFA'd him out of the AFL. That's odd.
Somebody's going to pop him because he throws like 102 in short bursts. So.
Oh, he got blast disease this year.
Oh, yeah. It
wasn't any better in the AFL either. Okay, I should have him. Yeah.
I saw like a flyer on him or like Gerson Bautista, but whatever.
It's kind of a similar profile.
It is and it isn't.
Yeah.
Green's move. Green's like has like two seam movement. It's not like it's.
Well, it's like all these, like, you know, the Drew Gagnons and the Gerson Batistas and like all these dudes. Like, you can NRI like 10 dudes of that quality.
Yeah.
And
Connor Green might be taking one.
Right, you know. JD Callahan's going to get an NRI somewhere.
Yeah.
Assuming he's healthy, and I'm assuming he's healthy enough to do so. But yeah, it's not a great depth situation.
It is not. I mean, they have nothing in the upper minors. This is an issue doing their prospect list.
Yeah, they have Alonzo and Jimenez and Desmond Lindsay, I guess. Dunn's a double.
Yeah. Peterson probably should have gotten there, but.
Do you think he starts back in Bingo, or do you think they sent him to Syracuse?
Dunn was at the press conference for Syracuse. He's going to start at Syracuse.
I feel like if it was last year, he would have spent April in Bingo.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, it's going to be different now.
Yeah. No, you'll have Dunn along. They might keep Jimenez back because he wasn't there that long and didn't smash the level. And they might want to keep the reps open for, like, Guillorme and TJ Rivera in the middle infield for a little bit.
How's Guillorme not going to be on the major league roster? How's TJ Rivera not going to be on the major league? What the fuck is this team feeling?
Because they're going to have Marwin Gonzalez and, I don't know, some dude, Jody Mercer.
How is Guillorme just not taking Jose Reyes' roster spot? How did Guillorme not take Jose Reyes' roster spot in June?
Because Jack Reinheimer, who again got DFA'd by the Cubs and picked up by the Rangers.
That's a good spot to talk about Adrian Beltre. Adrian Beltre retired.
He did. First ballot Hall of Famer for me.
Is there a...
I mean...
Who the fuck is not voting for Adrian Beltre as
top,
a first ballot
like,
Hall of Famer? Top five third baseman all time.
Yeah, it's like Schmidt, Brett, Eddie Matthews.
I'm writing about Adrian Beltre's weird career arc this is a career arc that like literally just couldn't be duplicated at this point. In part because he signed illegally as an age gate guy. Unlike the other age gate guys who for the most part were aging themselves down, he aged himself up a year so he
signed
could
sign earlier.
Yes. You know, they called him up at 19 and he was fucking horrible.
Yeah.
They didn't send him back down. And he had his best seasons at ages. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
His best seasons at ages 25, 31, 33, and 37.
31 was a Red Sox season?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, just, you know, a weird career arc.
People forget how good that random Red Sox, like, make good season was.
Yeah.
He was a monster.
You know, he wasn't terrible his 5 years in Seattle, but he wasn't Adrian Beltre either.
No, and Safeco was a brutal place to hit at the time.
That was ages 26 to 30, so what was supposed to be his prime, he was, like, a league average player.
Mm-hmm.
And he still, you know, is one of the five best players in his position of all time. That's not supposed to happen.
Right.
But he was that good both before and after. You know, this is a guy that, you know, if you take out those Seattle seasons and, you know, say he signed that five-year contract with Boston, who was interested in him at the time, too. You know, he signs with Boston in 2005. He picks up what, an extra World Series? You know, this is a guy that could have went down as, you know, the greatest third baseman of all time.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of take, you know, that 2004 and that 2010 season that are bracketing his horrible, his, you know, downturn in Seattle. Like, if he had played at that level the entire time, this is the guy that could have been, like, one of the 10 or 15 greatest players in Major League history.
I mean, at 37, he had 300, 358, 521 with 32 home runs.
Right.
As well, still well above average third baseman, yeah.
Third base and deserved it.
Yeah.
You know, the last couple of years he started getting hurt a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it was time, I think.
Still an above average hitter this year, despite his injury issues.
Yeah, it would have been cool to see him hang on another year, so he could have been one of the players that played in his teens, 20s, 30s, and 40s. Which
might have
slick
out 500 bombs, too.
It's like a tiny list, but I feel like if you know Adrian Beltre and the kind of personality he has, he was never going to be one of those guys that just hung up. Like, as soon as he started to apply, he was just going to be done. He's spoken very eloquently about, you know, how he kind of just, like, wants to go home and hang out with his kids.
Yeah, sure.
He's kind of very sanguine about the prospect of playing baseball in the last couple of years. So I assume he's not going to be one of these guys that, you know...
I mean, my God, that Dodgers season.
This is also a guy... I mean, this guy made $220 million.
He made a lot of money, yeah.
Right. I mean, this is... He was never one of the highest paid players in the league, except for that brief spell with Seattle before his contract ran out. But, you know, he made $9 million or more for 15 consecutive seasons, which is a hell of a thing. And he never signed a contract longer than 5 years in that term.
It adds up.
It does add up.
Maybe Trevor Bauer's onto something.
I mean, he signed a couple of
fights. I know.
But no good sentence starts with maybe Trevor Bauer.
Not usually.
He never end up leading anywhere. And, you know, he kind of has that third base thing going where, you know, he was a real two-way player.
Yeah.
So, and he also played in an era where the American League third base situation was generally pretty loaded.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't make as many all-star teams as you'd think. He never won an MVP. It's a third baseman who is one of the best defensive infielders of his generation. Who put up an 819 OPS and hit 477 home runs and had 3,166 hits. If you like are going around with a casual baseball fan,
yeah,
like you could make some money with that person not realizing that Adrian Beltre was almost a 3,500 player.
With multiple gold gloves.
Right. Like, I mean, this is, you know, he basically had 96% of Mike Schmidt's career.
Yeah.
Is that a pretty good comp?
Yeah, it works.
Yeah. You know, he was that kind of player. And, you know, he moved around a lot. So he did, you know, I think in the end he started becoming like the beloved franchise icon for the Rangers. But for a long time he was kind of, you know, his reputation really turned around in his 30s, I think, too.
It was really that Boston season that I think turned it. Because he, coming out of Seattle, he was just like a free agent bust. Like a contract year bust.
Yeah, like the lazy, doesn't care, like.
Because, like, his big season for the Dodgers around the same time as, like, Gary Matthews and Vernon Wells getting big contracts off sort of those career, their career years. So he was seen as one of those guys.
You know, he was just a killer player for a very long time. You know, like we said, it sounds like they're going to go with Profar at third.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of interesting. But, just, you know, I don't know if we're supposed to break this news or not, but BP is doing Adrian Beltre Day on Monday.
Sure.
You probably could have guessed that we were doing something like that, and I am planning on writing a piece about the uniqueness of his career arc.
Yeah.
Because it really is a unique career arc. But just kind of, you know, open up, like, his, you know, baseball prospectus or his baseball reference or his Fangraphs page and just kind of, like, look at how good this guy was for how long.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, definitely one of the most underappreciated players of the last, I don't know, played for 20 years. Yeah. 21 seasons in the majors. That's a long time.
It's a very long time. This first half went on for longer than I anticipated as well. So I guess we'll take a break. And when we come back, we'll answer your correspondence and do the usual third half things and what I guess we're calling the second half of this week's show. Welcome back. Now it's time for the second half of the show. And before we do the second half of the show, we do housekeeping. It's for all you kids out there, episode 135. For all you kids out there, it's the official podcast of your baseball prospectus Mets local site. You can find us on the internet at mets.locals.baseballprospectus.com or on the mothership at baseballprospectus.com. Show's on iTunes. Just search for all you kids out there and you listen or subscribe right there. I encourage you to do both. I also encourage you to rate and review the podcast. If you want to get in contact with the show, we're on Twitter at For All You Kids. Jarrett's on Twitter at J.A. Seidler. I'm on Twitter at Jeff Paternostro. We have a Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/For All You Kids Out There. And you can email the show at all you kids at baseballprospectus.com. And that that domain and really the whole site now, Jared, is under new ownership.
Yeah, so we were bought by it's public knowledge who bought it, right?
I believe so, yeah.
It was Brett, Rob, and Jonathan Judge. Mm-hmm.
Nothing on your end is really gonna change, so.
Right. Brett now has a fancy title. Stuff he's been really doing anyway.
Yeah.
Patrick is now in charge of editorial content, but he, like we said, he's been. This is a lot of formalizing roles for people that had already existed for some time in practicality.
Sure.
If we're being honest.
Nothing changing. Yeah. The podcast will still be in your. Ear holes once a week, et cetera.
We're talking about some stuff.
In terms of podcasts
and that kind of stuff.
New content opportunities.
We're currently not looking at changing the general format of this podcast.
As well organized as it's been this week and every other week.
After some discussion. That could change, but I don't think it is. If we decide to do something else, it will probably take the form of a new podcast, and it will probably not just be the two of us talking.
Two podcasts doing that, yeah.
Yes, our event is December 15th. We have a poll on the Facebook group.
Yes, Mickler's winning right now, so if you have strong feelings about that, I'm fine going back there, but if you have strong feelings about that...
Right, which apparently Liam does.
Liam wants to go to his towny bar, so.
Yeah, I don't really feel like hanging out on Houston. But,
I never feel like, I'm 36 years old, I find very few reasons to go to Houston nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, that was somewhere I hung out with like, my...
Oh, yeah, in my 20s, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
If I'm going
south of 14th Street now, it's a fucking adventure.
You know, I had a buddy that owned a bar on Houston. Yeah. And, go there.
I feel like we all had a buddy that owned a bar on Houston in our 20s. I can't remember where mine was. It was like West Village, maybe? Mine was more West Village.
I don't remember the guy's name anymore. He doesn't own it now. Yeah. He's like a lawyer. He's like a real estate lawyer or something now. So this was obviously a law school buddy of mine. But
yeah, I think it was actually by NYU. It's like a little... hole-in-the-wall faux Irish place near NYU.
Yeah, this was a hole-in-the-wall Korean place.
Yeah.
My friend was Korean.
That works, man. I prefer that to the faux Irish, God knows.
Yeah. I could probably dig up where it is.
Well, while you do that, I will queue up the email for this week.
Sure.
It is from our good friend Hank Happy. We have not heard from him for a while. It's good to... good to hear from Hank. Dear Mr. Paternostro and Jarrett, I love the idea of trading for a Kluber and Goldschmidt really trying to win next year with these teams announcing their rebuild before the offseason. But are there any mid-tier players on these teams that announce their rebuild like Cleveland, Mariners, and Arizona that could be a good improvement and still leave money over for Machado and Miller? I think Carlos Carrasco would help, and moving Vargas to the pen as a swingman could provide some depth. Do you like any other mid-tier guys like that who won't cost a lot of money or prospects and could leave the Mets enough cash to really spend in the FA market? P.S. I hope Jarrett's convalescence is going rapidly. I'll be entirely fine. When are you going back to work? After Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I'm planning on Monday. I still have to talk to my boss to confirm.
He's going to hockey games all the time, Hank. He's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I've discussed this on Twitter a little bit. At this point, I still got like occasional like sternum type pain, but that's mostly gone away. Yeah. I get tired faster than I should, although that had been a major problem going back a couple of years. It's less of a problem now than it was. And you know, you may have even noticed it on the podcast, but I usually have like elephant memory and can recall like bizarre facts from like the beginning of time.
You conflated Ross Barnes and Tip O'Neill on Twitter. I was shocked.
Yeah, my memory is not entirely as sharp as it normally is, but that's, again, this is all, my cardiologist pointed out that he does 1,000 of these a year, but it's the only one that I go through. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what he considers normal and what I consider normal, it's more like routine and standard than normal. This is, you know, when they kill you for 6 hours, this is something that, you know, does reduce your brain activity for a while moving forward.
So we did talk about Jan Gomes a little bit, and I think he fits sort of in that mid-tier. Range. I don't think he's going to be cheap by prospect standards. And we discussed sort of like a Alonso or Kelenic headliner, if only because the catching market is so is so shallow. I don't know what the Mariners are doing. Like, I've talked with Brendan about this, who of course writes Mariners stuff over at The Athletic, and he thinks they're kind of like doing the early 2010s Mets rebuild where they want to win like 75 to 78 games a year. So they might not deal those mid-tier guys, but you're really looking at like, none of them are cheap is the thing. Like, I think the Mets could really use D. Gordon in center field, but he's got like two in 27 with an option buyout left. Uh-huh. I don't know if they want him at that.
I don't know.
You know, the Segura contract is not insignificant. Like, do you want 1 year of Juan Nicasio?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Maybe you get Nick Vincent as like a relief arm.
Sure. I like
Nick Vincent. He's ARB3 this year. He's not going to be cheap, super cheap, but
yeah, you can go dig out one of their quote lesser, you know, like a Nick Rumbolo or somebody like that.
Yeah.
Wade LeBlanc?
My feelings on that. They did sign Ryan O'Rourke, so they could probably use a better lefty than Ryan O'Rourke. God knows. I feel like they're going to think that he is duplicative with Jason Vargas. Which he might be.
I mean, he's better.
He is better than Jason Vargas. Diamondbacks, we have to cut that $131 million payroll from this year, apparently. Here it gets a little like, the Diamondbacks are weird. Because you're looking at like, I don't know. They have a bunch of like ARB 2 and 3 guys, and then like the expensive guys. They don't have the same kind of like middle tier guys that the Indians and to a lesser extent the Mariners did.
Sure.
You know, Robbie Ray has 2 years left at ARB prices. Yeah, interesting flyer maybe. I don't know. You know, Shelby Miller and Taiwan Walker are still ARB eligible. Jake Lamb. But they kind of lack those mid-tier dudes. Go and get
Chris Owings?
You know, I've long been a fan of Chris Owings, but I feel like I feel like it might be time to stop being a fan of Chris Owings.
He really bought a ballast.
He did. You know, Brad Boxberger to strengthen the pen. Get one more year of ARB left.
Yeah. I don't know what
these guys would actually cost in prospects versus just signing the equivalent 1 year, $5 million guy.
Right. Like, there's a lot of free agent relievers. And
yeah. That's why maybe these teams, like, I don't know what these teams are actually getting for. That was my question with the Mariners more than anything. Like, I don't know what they're actually selling to rebuild that farm system.
Right, because, like, you know, you can move Edwin Diaz.
Yeah, that's, like, the big name.
You're going to get back kind of a vaguely similar package to what you got back for Paxton, and then you're pretty much done. You can move Gene Segura.
You
can
move Gene Segura, but not, maybe you get to move that Mike Leake contract.
The Cardinals are already paying part of it, so. Yeah. But you also need somebody to pitch for you.
You do. And it might be Justice Sheffield and Eric Swanson.
Alright.
So, Erasmo Ramirez is still there, too. So, you got that going for you. But that's the thing, it's like there's not, I don't know if you're getting these middle, like we've seen, like they move Zanino, you could probably, maybe they, you could flip Malik Smith, be useful for the Mets.
Nick Vincent's a free agent, by the way.
I thought he said it was ARB 3 on COTS.
Okay, MLB trade rumors has him as a free agent.
Did they non-tender him at some point and I missed it?
Feels like not something they would have done that early, but
yeah. I don't know who to,
I don't know who to believe either.
Yeah. What's the, yeah,
they,
baby.
They non-tendered him.
Did they? God bless. He's going to get like $3 or $4 million. So. The Red Sox have a minor league deal with Domingo Tapia. It's from Chris Cotillo.
I'm sure they do. I...
One of the first podcasts I did, maybe it'll go out. I haven't decided what I'm putting on the back end of the holiday episode, but there's one I do in my old podcast where I have Toby on and like present him with Tapia over Fulmer on my rankings. And he like, his response is priceless.
Yeah.
In like that very sort of like understated Toby way.
Ian Clarkin has been claimed off waivers from the Cubs, from the White Sox to the Cubs. Very exciting.
It's that man. It's 40 man ad days. It's crazy. It's wild.
Yeah.
All right. So, Jarrett, we have a Facebook.
Braves, the Braves actually bothered to protect Alex Jackson from Rule 5. Why?
Spots available.
He hit Alex Jackson between two levels of the minors this year, hit 201, 286, 360.
He's catching again?
In the sense of the word, yes. In the sense that he is donning the tools of ignorance and squatting behind the plate, he is catching.
Couldn't use that 40-man spot for like Bryce Harper or anything.
I mean, is somebody really going to pop Alex Jackson and stuff? Like, I guess the catching team pops him, makes him the backup catcher, and like is glad that he's horrible, and like maybe sends him down the year after.
I feel like that shit never works. Like, what's Louis Torrens doing right now?
So there's an idea that, like, what these tanking teams could do to, like, be really cheap and maybe pull a guy.
It's like start pulling the A-ball dudes that don't get, that you think you can hide like for an extra year. Yeah.
10 Rule 5 picks to be as bad as possible and maybe pull a guy while doing it. Like, if you're bottoming out, that's, like, what you should do, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
Now just, like, all the Rule 5 guys.
Carlos Tochi's everywhere, living the dream.
Yeah, fuck it! Starting right fielder, Jose Pujols.
Yeah.
Starting catcher, Alex Jackson. And you know what? You're going to pull a guy or two out of it. Yeah. You're going to pull an Odubel Herrera if you run like 10 or 12 of those guys out.
Somebody's going to make the jump, yeah.
And now you have the first overall pick the next year because you're absolutely fucking... worse.
Because Alex Jackson hits 170.
And you have an asset or two that you know. It's not the worst idea.
Sure. Let's get creative with our tank. Let's go like 35 win season if you're going to do it. You're going to have to at this point because of like variance and the number of teams that are tanking if you want that number one overall pick.
Yeah.
Because somebody like the Padres basically did this year. They kind of dumb lucked into, I don't know,
White Sox
the sixth overall pick instead.
The White Sox are exposing Spencer Adams. I would be shocked if he doesn't get popped by somebody. Yeah,
that's interesting.
That's, you know.
Yeah.
It's a decent arm. He's small at the upper levels of the minors. I know I know strikeout rate sucks, but, you know, he can fill like a swingman spot. He's as qualified to fill a swingman spot as a lot of people.
So we have a Facebook question from Matthew Jarrett.
Yeah.
Question for the pod. One that will probably get Jeffrey and Jarrett in trouble. This is always a good start. This is the question.
We'll answer this as the sub-questions come along.
What have you heard about the situation in Houston? Two very high-profile departures. I mean, at this point, it's like four. And some radical shifts in personnel. Kylie mentioned there were lots of issues there. Have you heard anything? Yeah. Have you heard anything? Yes.
Yes.
Can you talk about it?
No. Probably not.
Will you anyway?
Maybe.
So here's my thing. I want to use this question as sort of like a jumping off point for these type of questions in general. I will say, sort of like broadly, Matthew, you and the rest of our listeners are very smart people. If you were to hazard a guess of what might have happened here, you'd probably be in the ballpark.
Especially if you have a conscience.
But I'm going to say this, like, I don't want this show to be like weird rumor mongering. Like, we talk about shit that we sort of have on background obliquely at times. Because everyone in baseball, whether like peripheral people like us, people in scouting, people in ops, up to like high level GMs, love to shoot the shit about this kind of crap. And one of the reasons people talk to Jarrett and myself about stuff like this and other things that they know we're not going to go onto the podcast and talk about it or tweet about it. Because we don't really care to break news.
This will break at some point.
Yeah, somebody's going to do a story.
I guarantee you that between now and March, there's going to be an article by Jeff Passan, Rosenthal, or Ben Reeder, or somebody saying why this happened.
Yep.
You know? It's not that hard to put two and two together. A lot of people have done it already. It is the obvious reason.
My thing is, like, I want to be able to talk to the same people about baseball. I don't want them to worry that I'm going to come on the show after having two old fashions and spout off at the hip. I'm perfectly capable of spouting off on the hip on my own.
Right.
With just informed speculation.
This isn't actually the thing that would get us in trouble if we outed it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
However,
there's been other stuff.
Right. What would get us in trouble is if we released, like, you know, medical information that we had heard or personal information or something like that.
And, like, I take this stuff very seriously. Like, I don't like to be wrong. And usually, like, even the stuff I have cold, I won't. So we've talked, I think, obliquely about sort of, like, we had Marcos Molina's Tommy John 2 months ahead of times.
Yeah.
Like, on the day it happened, basically. But, like, you don't want to F that up.
It got out eventually.
Yeah. I had Syndergaard's, completely randomly got Syndergaard's elbow issues in spring a couple of years back.
That was also from me.
That was not from you. I had a separate source.
Okay. Well, I had to. I think I had it before you did.
Oh, whatever.
I definitely had the Wheeler Tommy John before you.
You had Wheeler Tommy John before me. Because that's what... It's a long story. This is... But this is all, like, the process shit. And it's just, like, it doesn't really matter. And we're not... Like, going into that offseason, I knew I wasn't going to rank Molina. Because I knew he had Tommy John. And I can write it in a way... I'll tell you what, I wrote dudes obliquely this year that I know have injury issues that I can't report. Already, in the first 7 lists.
Let's use somebody that just outed their own issue.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard Michael Kopech has had personal problems for many years.
Yeah.
He just disclosed that he battles fairly severe anxiety and depression. This is not something that was a secret within the community.
Yeah.
What the fuck purpose does it serve for me to write that?
I know more than you know. That's all it is. And a lot of baseball Twitter operates that way. And if you want to feel like an insider, you know, do your thing. It's fine. But it's not my game.
Yeah. And that was something that, unlike a lot of these, has some effect on his mound performance.
Sure.
Because at times he struggles to throw strikes and he has connected the two. He just publicly connected the two things.
And, you know, Zach Greinke walked away from the game for a year because of similar issues.
Right. You know, there's a baseball prospectus as a policy dating back to when Sam was the editor-in-chief is not in the business of breaking this type of news. I don't remember what episode it was, but maybe 3 years ago in the Sam and Ben era of Effectively Wild, they essentially did an entire podcast episode discussing this.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly what that was, but they both had absolutely cold a certain news item that they knew was going to come out anyway. It wasn't like, you know, whatever. And they decided not to break it. They did a podcast episode about it. I don't even remember what the news item was. I don't even remember if they said what the news item was. You may remember, and if you don't remember, you can look it up on Wikipedia. About 15 years ago, Baseball Prospectus tried to break a major news item and was wrong about it. And that's still on the Wikipedia page. Yeah, that is something that follows you personally and your publication through, like, the end of time. It can, if it's a major thing. Oftentimes, you just forget about these things, especially now.
Especially nowadays, with the news cycles as short as they are. I mean, I had Wade LeBlanc's extension 2 days ahead of time, which is, like, a dumb thing. I totally wanted to break, just to break it, because it's very on-brand. I didn't, because it would have burned my sores. And I don't like single source stuff. I could have gotten second source confirmation, but I just said I wasn't going to do it. And also, it's Wade LeBlanc's extension. Who cares?
I'm not even going to reveal who it was, but I had a major signing about 6 hours before it broke within the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And it was just like, this is going to come out anyway. Like, you know,
I don't get paid extra for, you know, it's not my job.
Yeah, and if I'm wrong,
then
it's not just I have bad info. It's this guy could have changed his mind too.
Oh yeah,
you know, because that happened. You know, look at DeAndre Jordan in basketball a few years ago. You know, then I look like the asshole. You know, it's just, you know, it's not worthwhile. We don't. And this is the same reason we don't run as many blind quotes as everybody else. If I am granting a source anonymity to go on the record, there better be, like, a really fucking good reason, and I don't want my name in print is not actually a good reason. Like, you know. And there are people that do that, and it's a perfectly fine way to do this. And there are people that love reading those blind scrap quotes. We'll run them occasionally when they're interested, when we find that they're interesting and funny. Yeah. I think you run them a little bit more than I do.
Yeah, usually if they're funny. I just, like, I don't know. You hear a lot of dumbass scout quotes, too, is the thing. People don't realize that.
You know, I can get you a scout quote within 6 hours to take 26 different positions on a bunch of different stuff. Because, especially, you know, I know which teams and which people I talk to rate guys a certain way. You know, so if I want a position, you know, I wrote the Justice Sheffield transaction analysis. I also wrote the Swanson half of it. I'll say specifically on Swanson, I could have gotten a scout quote saying Swanson's a better piece than Justice Sheffield. I could have gotten a scout quote saying Swanson's an org guy. Because that's just how divergent the opinions are. And most guys are actually like that, like where there's wildly divergent opinions. You know. We had a scout not that long ago who did not think Vlad was an elite hitter, elite hitting prospect. You know, he still thought he was very good, but, you know, maybe more of a 6'6 than an 8'7.
Yeah.
You know, so you can find wildly, and I could probably, I don't know for sure I could get this, but I could probably get a scout quote that says Vlad's going to win the MVP next year, too. If you want to go real crazy. But yeah, so to discuss why people are leaving the Astros,
let's sort of answer the question.
We would have to reveal certain things which have been told to us or which have been discussed in the industry that were not, you know.
I don't think either of us have the, like, first-hand sourcing on this either.
No, but again, so we wouldn't be telling you why they're leaving.
No.
We'd be telling you the industry consensus on why they're leaving.
Sure.
Now, I'm pretty sure it's right.
Yes.
But, you know, this is not our story to tell. That's what we're telling you. We've heard the same stuff that I think everybody else has heard.
Sure.
So, take that how you want it.
You want to talk about Becky Lynch for 15 minutes?
Yeah, we could talk about Survivor. You didn't watch Survivor Series, did you?
I don't have the WWE Network anymore.
Doesn't mean you didn't watch Survivor. You didn't watch
NXT. I didn't get around to it, no. I was working on the Reds list.
Sure, sure. I mean,
I literally was working on the Reds list.
So, they did the Raw, they did the SmackDown invasion of Raw, but the twist of it this year was the SmackDown women invading instead of the men.
Yeah.
And the entire segment was built around Becky Lynch destroying Ronda Rousey repeatedly. This is going back to last week's Raw.
Mm-hmm.
Nia Jax, who has a long history of potatoing people, potatoed Becky Lynch, broke her nose, and may or may not have concussed her. They announced the concussion. I think it's legit, but I also think they wanted to not run this match if they didn't have to. Like, I think they were looking for a way out of this match.
Mm-hmm.
So they put Charlotte in for Becky Lynch. But because Becky Lynch did not, you know, she continued this angle even though her face was busted up. There are now, like, iconic images of, like,
yeah,
bloody Becky Lynch destroying Ronda Rousey and posing and those kinds of things. Which somehow turned Becky Lynch from, like, I would say one of the top five stars in the... Becky Lynch is clearly the biggest star in this company now.
Yeah.
Which is a thing that's happened. And that's a thing worth discussing, too. We'll get to that part in a minute. But they pulled Becky Lynch out of the match. They put Charlotte in. Charlotte turned heel. I think it's very clear they're building to Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey's main event of WrestleMania now.
Yeah.
They're running angles on social media, all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
There's ways you can get to this match. I think a cool way. One of the few things they haven't done with the Royal Rumble yet is have one of the champions enter it to get the other title too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a thing you could, you know, you could have Becky Lynch enter the Royal Rumble, win it, and try and take Rousey's title too. That's a thing you could do that would be kind of cool that they've never done with the Royal Rumble. The other one is like the surprise winner out of nowhere. And we've talked about both those kinds of ideas in the past in these wrestling segments. I assume this means they're going to go back to Becky Lynch and Charlotte with the roles reversed.
Sure.
Another thing you could do is have Charlotte take the title off of Becky Lynch and just have Becky Lynch win the Royal Rumble the normal way.
Mm-hmm.
You could also have Nia Jax take the title off of Ronda Rousey and have Ronda Rousey win the title win the Royal Rumble the normal way. These are all ways to get to Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch. Or you could just say, fuck it, we're going to do champion versus champion at WrestleMania and not come up with a storyline to get there. Yeah. Also a thing they could do. So Becky Lynch has also now rebranded herself as the man. She's mm-hmm. no longer the last kicker.
Yeah.
Which has raised some interesting... You know, I've, like, seen, like, feminist think pieces in, like, major publications about this.
This is like a slight pitch right here.
Right. Like, what does it mean that WWE's biggest star is a woman calling herself the man? That is an article that has popped up on in like major like pop culture type mm-hmm. things. And there's interesting ways to think about that. WWE, of course, is now claiming credit for this, and this is all part of Stephanie's great women's
revolution. Yeah, of course,
they
yeah.
They botched this on day.
I mean, they sort of like, you know, this is like the parallels have always been Stone Cold Steve Austin here. They kind of like that just sort of happened organically too. Anytime right. they try to force something, it doesn't work. They did at least in this case, unlike, you know, Braun Strowman, CM Punk, to a certain extent, at least managed to like get out of the way.
One time out of the 250, the bad booking is not gonna matter, and the fans are just gonna refuse to accept the bad booking anyway.
Yeah.
Right. But they could have derailed it. You know, they did put Becky over Charlotte
mm-hmm.
clean several times, which...
I mean, they could have ended up running the Becky-Rousey match Survivor Series and Rousey win clean with the armbar and...
Right, you know, they could have taken the title off of her. They could have, you know, she only gave like one real heel interview. Mm-hmm. Like they didn't have her do like the "I hate the fans" thing. They tried it for 1 week, realized it wasn't working, and then backed her off into a tweener, basically. And they have done that before, and that's a great way to kill heat. Take case in point, the Daniel Bryan heel turn.
Which they've already backed off on because they had to give him the title because AJ Styles is going to New Japan.
Maybe, who knows? he might just be leveraging for a contract.
Sure.
Contract that's up a in thing January
for
us.
That's a thing people can do now.
That he has not resigned and that he is talking to New Japan.
If I was him, I'd be looking at shorter dates and to wrestle Omega and Tanahashi and...
Which is the exact same thing Daniel Bryan did this summer, and he got that contract. So they're now going to get leverage now. You know, because AJ Styles could walk right in with that elite group, and they could start an American promotion or take over ROH, and New Japan would pay him a fucking fortune to work 8 tours a year.
Yeah, and you have Styles, Omega headlining MSG in April, opposite WrestleMania. That's a bigger match than a lot of stuff you could headline WrestleMania with.
Right. Probably not bigger than Rousey versus
Blitz. Sure.
You know, obviously a women's match headlining WrestleMania is obviously something they want to do. Mm-hmm. I would stipulate, I don't think they're actually doing this for the right reasons.
The WWE in a nutshell.
Yeah. I
mean, it's no different than when they like, this is in hindsight, not the most pleasant comp in the world, but when they did the Guerrero-Benoit double wins at MSG.
Right. Or, you know, scheduling Evolution to provide cover for the last out, to provide cover for Crown Jewel.
Yeah.
You know, this is providing cover for Linda McMahon as Secretary of Commerce and Saudi deal and how terrible television is otherwise and that sort of stuff. But, you know, good for Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch has had a difficult, you know, if you go back to her as Rebecca Knox on the Indies, you know, she was like an early shimmer star who got caught in that, you know, she doesn't have the, quote, WWE look, so they weren't going to sign her. And she started having concussion and neck problems and left the industry for a while. Got a degree in drama, which is one of the reasons, and did theater work for a number of years, which is one of the reasons why she's, like, the only good promo on the entire roster.
It's like with Jericho, too, like, actually took acting lessons and shit.
Well,
like, it does make a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, she was, like, doing like prestige theater in Chicago. So you know, came back, signed with WWE, despite it many times being the most over person in the division and not really being pushed, they still really never pushed her. They then booked an angle for her to look stupid and turn heel, and the fans just said, "No, we're not doing this." And you know, this is how this kind of stuff, you know, that in the attempted heel turn, she basically got a chance to ditch like the, I wouldn't say bad gimmick, but the gimmick.
Yeah, like the steampunk shit's not there anymore. And...
Right, you know, her gimmick now is, you know,
she's an ass kicker. Like, it's all like, it's like if you're watching wrestling, you want to see tough people doing cool moves.
So here's
and
the thing
being cool. Like, it's not brain surgery.
Here's the thing that's both obviously happened and has been reported happened. Paul Heyman is booking all of this.
Yeah. This is a very ECW angle now that you say that. So
this is all very Paul Heyman.
This is like very like 95 ECW-ish actually. With like the trappings of the modern WWE still framing it, but sort of like underbelly of it is very 95 ECW.
Right, you know, doing like the word shoots on Twitter. Yeah. And, you know. But it's like it comes across as, because people know that, you know, Ronda Rousey had a mental breakdown after her last two fights. It's mm-hmm. not some, you know, it's something that she's talked about, and she quit MMA over it.
Yeah,
and you also know in the back of your mind that she's happy doing pro wrestling, and mm-hmm. like when Becky's making fun of her getting knocked out, it's like not really bothering her, but it's like just real enough that, you know, you can play off of it.
Yeah, and against the kind of shit that was very common in the Raven Dreamer stuff that they were.
You know, the same thing going the other way. A lot of the stuff that Ronda has said, this is going to be the weirdest comp ever. a lot of the stuff Ronda has been saying about Becky is a lot of the same stuff that, like, Fox News is saying about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah.
You know, you're like a try-hard millennial. Mm-hmm. You know? That she's not, like, the elite athlete. You know, she likes clothes. She, you know.
Lynch buried her with the best tweet I've ever seen about that. I forget the exact wording, but it was like, oh, you got into, they're true millennials, the one that got into pro wrestling in their early 30s.
Yeah. You know, that she wasn't, you know, while Ronda was winning gold medals, you know, she was in drama school and working as an independent and all that kind of stuff. And again, this is very Paul Heyman.
Yeah.
You know, this is like the 25 year later version of like the Dreamer and stuff.
Yeah.
The Dreamer Raven stuff, but for a modern era.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is, you know, and Lynch is starting to cross over into the mainstream, too, which is, that would not, like, if I had, like, of all the people on the roster to cross over as a mainstream star, I would not have guessed her. There's ways in which it makes sense.
Yeah,
but...
yeah. I mean, she's a good promo, she's got a good look.
Yeah.
But she, I mean, also from that division, I would have guessed like, yeah, I would have guessed like Sasha Banks before her, but
or Charlotte. I mean, they definitely tried.
Charlotte's so wooden, though. Like
Charlotte, right? I mean, you know, Bayley, I would have guessed.
Yeah, sure, I could see that.
Yeah,
they had, like a weird like post irony thing. Sure, we love that stuff nowadays.
Right, and you know, Bayley at times had been, you know, like to that level of over. But, you know, it makes sense, and, you know, it's just, it's kind of, the fan base that's left.
Yeah.
The hardcore WWE fans, the people that are spending $500 on WrestleMania tickets.
They also know all these mid-late 90s ECW plot beats.
Right. The people that flew out to All In.
Yeah.
The people that are either going to take over or G1 Supercard WrestleMania weekend. The core fan base mm-hmm. is like dying for like a homegrown huge women star. You know, these are the people that didn't want the Divas era of wrestling, that turned on the Divas era of wrestling and like want Becky Lynch to be a bigger star than any of the guys. That's part of this.
And, yeah.
And this is a larger cultural moment about women's empowerment and, you know, gender roles. And that sort of thing, too.
Also, the men's side of the product right now is trash.
And that's fun, you know. And even calling yourself the man, you know, the man or the guy is a Vince McMahon term mm-hmm. for the person that the company is built around. And everybody knows that, too. You know, in storylines, she started calling herself that to piss off Charlotte. But
we need a Judith Butler essay on this, is what we really need.
Right, but it's, you know, and she might be the guy now.
Yeah.
Because it can't be Roman Reigns for a while because he's got leukemia. And it's not going to be Braun Strowman. And it's not going to be Brock Lesnar. And it's not going to be AJ Styles. And it's not going to be Daniel Bryan. And I think they're going to run into a harsh reality if they think it's Drew McIntyre.
Wait, what? I don't even want to know.
Oh, God, Drew McIntyre's been getting a super push. Drew McIntyre squashed Samoa Joe. Squashed 45 seconds, broke his finish, and beat him with his move.
He's got a very Vince McMahon look.
This is not the first time Vince has tried to do this.
No, I'm well aware.
You know, if they think Drew McIntyre's the man, they're gonna be, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but my prediction would be that's gonna go worse than Roman Reigns went. And you know, if Roman Reigns comes back healthy and is able to perform, because of what has happened to him,
he's going
to
be a huge, yeah.
But at least for a while, you know, there is this opening, and, you know, hey, if you want to, you know, make your Omega and Okada, Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey, there's worse ideas.
Yeah.
And I, based on the matches both of them were having, and given that they're going to, you know, plan that out, match out, move for move, DDP style.
Oh, yeah.
They could have a hell of a match. So, we'll see. I am going to WrestleMania. I couldn't talk you into it.
You could not.
I tried. I was describing myself when I talked about the hardcore WWE fan. Because in many ways, I think I am, you know, at this point, the typical WWE fan, as weird as that is. And that's more of a commentary on how the fandom has changed and how the fandom has shrunk, too. Because it's really, yeah. At the same time that they're, in a pop culture sense, hotter than they ever are, like, by all reasonable metrics, there's just, like, less people, like, watching wrestling and going to wrestling shows than there have been in a while. Despite that, WrestleMania came very close to being a first-day sellout, and what's left are either really bad tickets or really expensive tickets, and in many cases, the bad expensive tickets, like the 28th row on the floor and that kind of stuff. So
there you have it. All right, I got to go to dinner. You have to go watch Creed 2. The Mets still haven't announced any 40-man roster moves one way or the other.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we'll talk about all of that next week on another edition. For all you kids out there.